So how is author Margaret Atwood doing? She was a hard-to-get interview after her The Handmaid's Tale was first published in 1985. She let the book speak for itself, and it just blew away the bestseller lists. The dystopian novel about the theocratic totalitarian state of Gilead, where many women are relegated to the role of child producer for the elite. The book sold over 8 million copies, became that Emmy-winning TV series that spawned the red cape costume of choice for Halloween and abortion rights protesters. The book even became an opera, a ballet, a graphic novel. Then Atwood launched her follow-up last year. The Testaments was a bestseller as well, the co-winner of the Booker Prize, and it's out in paperback this week, so we have an opportunity to ask, what's on Margaret Atwood's mind as she joins us from Toronto by Skype? Margaret Atwood, welcome.
Lovely to be here.
And we're in a pandemic, and, you know, I'm in my basement, yeah. You're in your study, and that's the first thing I've wanted to ask you, because, you know, people are calling this time dystopian. The pandemic, racial reckoning, white supremacists emboldened to parade on the streets, immigrants separated at the border, a move to roll back, remove Roe v. Wade. In The Handmaid's Tale, in Gilead, fertility has been curtailed by environmental factors. We sure have them now. Performing abortions is a crime. What do you say to people who say, this is it, this is Atwood's Handmaid's Tale, this is it, this is dystopia?
If it were it, you and I would not be on the radio. So it's not it yet, but it's creepily similar. So the Gilead society is white supremacist. In the book, no ifs or buts about that. It is a theocracy. And I wrote it in answer to the question, if the United States were to have a totalitarianism, what kind of totalitarianism might it be?
And you wrote it, we understand, in West Germany, with the Berlin Wall and the Soviet Empire still in place. Could you feel that chill, you know, by being there? Did that make its way into your book?
Yeah, it certainly contributed to the atmosphere. So every Sunday, the East German Air Force would make sonic booms just to remind us they were there. And I, at that time, visited East Germany. I visited Czechoslovakia, which was still part of the Soviet Empire, and I visited Poland. So I'm interested in how these things begin, of course, because I'm old enough to have lived through World War II. So we had Mussolini, we had Hitler, we had Stalin, and shortly after that we had Mao. And we've had a number of them since that time. We've had Pol Pot, we've had the Argentinian generals, we've had Pinochet. So how do these things get going? And then how do they end? So in The Handmaid's Tale, we see them at the beginning. And in The Testaments, 16 years have passed, and we're beginning to see the crumblings. Because quite frequently, these regimes become corrupt. Well, why did I say quite frequently? Always. they become corrupt in their aim, even though they may have been idealistic to begin with. Their aim is to hold on to power. So they will do basically anything, but if they've come in under the slogan of being better, offering people a better life, being purer, being gooder, all those kinds of things, when that begins to fall apart, then the seams start giving. So that's where we are in the Testaments. Things are beginning to come apart.
We should say for the people who haven't read either, for Handmaid's Tale, and by the way, run, don't walk to read them, but in The Handmaid's Tale, the women who are essentially raped to provide children for the elites.
We don't call it that. We call it being given a choice. Okay, yeah. So your choice is you can be a breeder for the elite, or you can go to work in the colonies and clean up toxic waste. Your choice. Nobody's making you do this. You're just you do have a choice.
Okay, so the women who choose to be raped, but now we come to the Testaments, and we understand that some of what you were saying, you had to coordinate with the people doing the television show because they went a little bit beyond the end of Handmaid's Tale.
I was writing it at the same time they were writing theirs. So it's sort of simultaneous writing. But because mine is set 16 years into the future, they hadn't got there yet. So it actually gives them a lot more material.
Right. What did you want to say in the Testament?
Oh, I love that question. It's what were you trying to say? You know, spit it out. I wanted to tell a story, which is what all novels are. And it is a story about three different people, all of whom are female. One of them grows up as a young woman inside Gilead, and she would have quite a different point of view from the other one who has grown up outside it, with everything that we have now, plus, including street demonstrations, the internet, all of those things which a young girl in Gilead would not have, because they aren't allowed to read even. And the third one is somebody we've seen only from the outside in The Handmaid's Tale, and that would be Aunt Lydia.
Aunt Lydia, who collaborated with the men in power to train other women to be breeders.
So people from oppressed groups who achieve a certain amount of limited power within a system have always interested me. So you get to have some more power than the other people in your oppressed group, but you will never be a top leader. So why do they take those positions? Because there's never any lack of applicants. So that's one of the questions that I'm looking at in the book. Why do collaborators collaborate?
Yeah. The ants in The Handmaid's Tale, they were the ones that helped subjugate the women that were going to be the breeders. They're the ones
They're the control group. Right. Somebody said, so when I first published it, somebody said, well, I just love this book. It was just like my girls' private school.
Maybe not
quite. I think the skirts are longer in my book.
Well, because you know, in Handmaid's Tale, some see it as a manifesto about keeping women's right to choose, not in the way it's described in The Handmaid's Tale, but, you know, in the obvious way, whether or not to give birth. But then you also have this story running alongside it of women who are horrible to other women.
Oh, that never happens in real life, does it? Oh, yes. I'm a great fan of Mean Girls. that's a comedy, and The Handmaid's Tale is not. But the women who are the aunts think they're doing it for your own good. And sometimes people really are doing something for your own good that you find disagreeable. So we leave it to the reader to decide. And all the things are a matter of what options are available. So wherever we may find ourselves in life, our choices are always limited. I'm going to share this with you, Robin. I will never be a ballet dancer.
What?
Yes, I know. You can be anything you want to be. Well, I'm sorry. But at the age of 80, I think that route is cut off from me.
And I probably won't sing back up for Bruce Springsteen.
That would be fun.
But you say your choices are always limited. We heard how limited they are in The Handmaid's Tale, you know, breeder or toxic waste worker. But you wrote that right after the women's movement was expanding choices for women, you know, who've been sort of locked into certain roles in the 50s. The new phrase was, you can do whatever you want. Are you saying there's this sort of sugar-coated fairy tale?
There's always a sugar-coated fairy tale. And sugar-coated fairy tales usually have something to them. So what we're told in The Handmaid's Tale is nobody will ever aggress you on the street. That's true. It's pretty locked down. It's very organized. It's very structured. So unpleasant surprises. For instance, you'll never go out and get trashed in a bar and have somebody put a rape drink into your drink, because you're not going to be in a bar, period. Like that. You'll be very safe within limits. They also go in for very early marriages just to make sure you're really safe.
Because you're practically imprisoned. Your observations from north of the border of what's happening here in the United States as we approach an election, is it maybe interesting you in another book?
I think younger fingers are busily at work right now writing those other books. But from studying the totalitarian playbook, here are some of the things they do. They destroy an independent judiciary. They destroy an independent media, and they make it so that only they ever get elected. That's what this uprising in Belarus is about, the rigged elections. So I think you have to ask yourself and anybody else who's running for office, what kind of country do you want us to be living in? If you want to avoid living in a totalitarianism, you have to keep an independent judiciary, you have to keep an independent media, and you have to avoid a police state.
That's Margaret Atwood. The Testaments, her follow-up to The Handmaid's Tale, is out in paperback this week, and we were just interested in what's on her mind. Sounds like plenty. Margaret Atwood, thank you so much.
Thank you, and keep safe. Don't get sick, and vote early and vote often.
No, not the often part.
They used to say that.
Margaret, thank you. We really appreciate your time. Thank you.
And thank you very much.